This is Evelyn Gansglass. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Somalia from 1966 to 1968. Today is December 7, 2019, and I'm interviewing Alicia Crane, who was a Peace Corps volunteer in Mexico as part of an environmental education program from 2012 to 2015. From 2015 to 2016, she was volunteer leader for diversity and inclusion as part of the Mexico program. And since then, she has been working in the Office of Civil Rights and Diversity in Washington, D.C. at headquarters. So a very interesting history, I am sure.
Yes.
let me start by asking you, why did you join the Peace Corps?
To be perfectly honest, I joined the Peace Corps to strengthen my Spanish skills and to gain international experience. I had recently graduated from grad school in urban and regional planning, and during my grad school experience, I had an internship in China, which interested me in international work, and one of my professors in the urban and regional planning program at Portland State University was also a return Peace Corps volunteer, and she'd talked to me about her experience because she went also after she got her master's in planning, and it just opened that door for me, and so that's what I applied to do. Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Springfield, Illinois.
Did you have much orientation to the wider world, or was it all Illinois? Did you?
We had a pretty wide orientation. My mom was from Springfield, and so she and my dad moved back there when she got pregnant with my sister, and her family was there, so we were really close with her family. My grandfather was from Florida, and so we went to Florida frequently when I was a kid, and my grandmother was from Wisconsin, so we went to Wisconsin. I grew up showing horses. My grandfather was a doctor, too, so my mom had a college education. She actually went to George Washington. I think in fourth grade, we had a student teacher who was a returned Peace Corps volunteer. And so I think that was the first time I heard about it.
And you mentioned you went to where did you go to grad school?
Portland State University in Oregon.
So how did you end up in Portland?
I finished my undergrad degree at Oregon State University in Corvallis, and then stayed there basically after college.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So you applied, were you still in grad school when you applied for Peace Corps?
No, I was out of school. Actually, what happened was I had a job, and I was fired from the job, and I had a relationship that ended the same week. And the first thing I thought to myself was that I could apply to the Peace Corps. And so I did.
Okay.
And that was in 2010.
And how long did that take to get into the Peace Corps then?
Almost 2 years.
2 years. What? Talk a little bit about the process.
They still were mostly operating off of a paper application at the time, or it was a combination of paper and electronic, even in 2010. And so that just took a long time. I remember, I think I actually turned some forms into PDF fillable forms because they weren't fillable. And I thought that was weird. Because my relationship ended, life changes. I was going to a therapist, and I included that in my application materials, a health review form, and it was flagged. And because of one word that my therapist wrote down that I was dealing with ongoing family issues, the Peace Corps medical officers decided that I needed to be on a 6-month hold. Even though my therapist wrote a letter saying that I was totally stable, I wasn't showing any signs of mental illness, that it was, talk therapy.
Yeah.
And she thought I'd make a great volunteer, all of these things. And yeah, they still put me on a 6-month hold.
Well, that's a shorter hold than some other people.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. So, yeah.
And what did you do while you were on hold? Did you have a job?
Yeah, I was temping mostly.
Okay. So then they said, all right, you can become a volunteer. Was Mexico did you select Mexico?
I selected Latin America. The region.
Because you wanted to learn Spanish.
Yeah, and I had a background in Spanish. I studied Spanish in high school and college. And then I started, because I had an initial interview, and she said to strengthen Spanish skills, and I had to take a CLEP test to prove that I still had the skills because my last class had been so long before. I passed the test, and so I just started practicing Spanish just to strengthen those skills. And they offered me somewhere in Latin America, they didn't say where, and Sub-Saharan Africa, and really tried to push me to the Sub-Saharan Africa. But I'm queer, and I was not interested in trying to be super closeted. I was 30 years old, and I'd been practicing Spanish, and I passed the test. So I said, no, thank you. You can send me to somewhere in Latin America, or I'm not going. I had also been an AmeriCorps Vista volunteer, mm-hmm. and so I was committed to gaining the experience, but especially once I got there. But I was also, after almost 2 years by that point, having a master's degree, I was like, I'm a very highly qualified candidate. If you don't want me, I'll find a job somewhere else. Thank you very much.
So they then offered you Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess by 2010, all of the training was in country. Was all of the country, all the training in country?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So talk a little bit about the training you went through.
The training was in Querétaro, Mexico, at the office, Peace Corps. For the most part, it was classroom-based, so we were mostly working with relatively formalized eco-clubs or youth groups, or trying to build what are called eco-technias, like wood-burning stoves and that direct the smoke out of the house or whatever. I think Peace Corps Mexico was still figuring things out at that point. So we went up to the mountains for 2 weeks and spent a whole week building a cistern, learning how to build a cistern. I don't think any of us built a cistern during our service. It would have been much more useful to learn classroom management skills, which we'd never learned. But, you know, it was a lot of 120 hours or 135 hours of Spanish classes. Learned a lot about the history and culture of Mexico. I felt very well prepared to live and work in Mexican society, Mexican culture, after those 3 months. Figuring out a ways of team building amongst the volunteers, not so much. I'm not in contact with any of my really return volunteers from my group, a couple, but really sporadically. And part of that has to do with the fact that I'm queer and had a very homophobic, humiliating experience during the sex ed portion when I asked for dental dams and the doctor just said, no, you can make one out of saran wrap. And then another volunteer echoed that. And then after that class was over, another volunteer came up to me and said that she could tell how upset I was and that she was an ally, which to me was like...
So this all happened in training.
Yeah, in training. And so I was like, well, if you were an ally, you would have said something and stood up for me. But thanks anyway. So that didn't really engender me to my mm-hmm.
How big a group was it? How
20.
20 of you. And what was the purpose of the eco program, of the environmental education program, basically?
Basically to increase the environmental understanding and awareness of the Mexican population.
So this was geared to youth or adults? Or?
It depended. Once we got to site, it really depended on each different site. Some people were working on perma farming, permaculture. Other people worked on signage in a national forest.
So very national different park, kinds of things.
A lot of different range of things.
And had Mexico requested this program?
Yeah. Yeah, we, the Peace Corps doesn't have a bilateral agreement with Mexico still. And so we only go to places where the Mexican government wants us to go, assigns volunteers. There's a collaborative process where they decide the sites together with Mexican agencies. So basically it's the Mexican EPA, SEMARNAT, and the Mexican Forest Service, all of those kinds of things, and then the National Science Foundation for the technology transfer program that is now really teaching English for STEM.
Hmm. So you went through the training, and it was, you said, a 3 month training program?
Mm-hmm.
3 months of language and the environmental. Did you move to the community in which you were going to be working as part of this training, or was it all in this training center?
It was mostly in the training center. I think we went to site for a week just to meet people. And if there was a volunteer currently there to interact with them, get sort of a transfer of knowledge, meetings and things like that.
So training passed, and where were you then assigned?
I was assigned to the Bosque La Primavera, out right outside of Guadalajara, and to the management agency.
What management agency of?
Of the Bosque La Primavera. It's a natural protected area.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's like a national park, is that it?
More like a natural reserve. And the idea, they try to keep people out, and the idea is because it's delicate, has really delicate soils, a lot of endemic species that are found nowhere else that are probably going to be extinct soon, because Guadalajara is growing around it.
Mm.
It's going to be a park. It's going to be soon.
So what was your role, or what was the intended role of you in that park?
I worked with the local community that was at the main public entrance to the Bosque, the town of La Primavera, and I lived with a family there, and I mostly, for the first year, conducted a weekly eco club. And then I tried to work on various projects that the management agency was working on. Because most Peace Corps volunteers develop, live and work and don't leave their site a lot where they live. And my situation was much different, where I had to leave where I lived every day and go into the city, into the office. So I had like a 9-to-5 job for the most part. So, and I was trying to integrate into both, but you know, you have to sleep sometime. And I was exhausted and just, it was a lot. I mean, it's an emotional toll. So I just decided to integrate into the office because I was required to go there by my counterpart, every day. So
I'm sorry, I missed. So where were you actually living, in Guadalajara?
In La Primavera. For the first year, I lived in the town of La Primavera with a mom who had her kid was in the eco club. And so the volunteer before me set that up. But after about a year, and I started understanding Spanish more and understanding the town dynamics, I was living in a very contested place with people who had a long-standing dispute, and it was really interfering with my ability to do anything in the town. So I moved into the city, into Guadalajara.
What was the problem there?
It was an interfamilial conflict over the house, and I was in the middle of it, basically.
So then you moved into an apartment by yourself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the central of Guadalajara. Yeah.
That was a lot better.
It was a lot better. I had an hour commute to the office, but then I was seen much more as a neutral party in the town, and I continued to go to the town and to do my projects there. I started after about a year, I started organizing about 6 moms of the Eco Club kids. Those were the ones who showed up after all the public meetings, a project to train them how to run a recycling collection center. So we did a quite a long training program where we talked about reduce, reuse, recycling. I educated them about all of the traffic or trash gyres, the plastic islands and the oceans and things like that. And then we built a bodega to collect recyclable materials from the school. Kids would bring the materials to school, collect them at school, transfer them to the bodega, and then they would sell the materials once they had enough to garner some money, and just to fund small projects in the town, not really as an
income.
And it was funded by a Mexican nonprofit.
That's great.
Yeah.
What kind of materials were they?
Plastic, mostly. Beer cans, but mostly plastic bottles and milk bottles and things like that.
So, I know this is a big issue for later on as well. Did your sexuality play any role in your interactions in Mexico? Or did people not care not even pay attention?
People really didn't care. They really didn't pay attention. The signals are different in every culture. So we think it's someone's really obvious here. They're not going to be obvious in another culture. Some of the moms were curious when I would sort of evade some of their questions. And And then once I had relationships with them, and they're about my same age, so I was honest with them, and they were more curious than anything. And I, you know, of course I was on Facebook, and I decided if I was going to be friends with people on Facebook, they were just going to find out because I wasn't going to edit myself. And, but I also just, I didn't talk about it a lot. I dated one person, maybe for about 6 months, but yeah, it wasn't that great of a relationship, so it's not like so I was going
big,
anywhere.
Was there a big community in...
In Guadalajara, yeah. Guadalajara is considered the San Francisco of Mexico. Huh. So, yeah, there were a lot of gay discos, and it was, yeah.
Nobody cared.
Not really. I mean, people would stare at me on the street, but that's no different than here.
So that was a good thing. Yeah. Okay, so you did that same job for 2 years?
Three. For a third year to finish that project with the bodega. And then I did an organic gardening project, mostly with the same women, but then a few other people added. We ended up building 11 organic gardens. And there was no communal land, so we couldn't do a community garden. So we did individual gardens, and that was a spa grant.
What is spa?
It's funded by USAID.
What does SPA stand
for? Special Projects Assistance.
Oh. I think.
They're pretty small grants, I think less than $10,000.
So you had applied for that?
Yeah.
So you said that what you did in Mexico had a lot to do with what you did later on. I know you, after this job, you became the diversity and inclusion person in Mexico. How did that all evolve?
I'm not exactly sure what year it was launched, but in 2014, Mexico hosted a same-sex couple initiative training. It was a week-long training for the Mexican staff, well, for post staff. So they did these trainings at several posts around the world to train the staff to be ready to receive a same-sex couple once the Defense of Marriage Act was struck down and the Supreme Court passed gay marriage. However that happened, because I was in Peace Corps, so I don't remember if that happened exactly. But to create a pathway, basically. Mm-hmm. And so we had that training, and after a couple of those trainings, the staff that was giving that training realized that post-staff needed intercultural competence, diversity, and inclusion training writ large. And so they modified that, and that's the training they do now. But as part of the training in Mexico, all of the staff participated, and they had a panel of 6 volunteers who had been active and involved and vocal about things needing to be changed or were giving trainings on different things. And I had been the chair of the volunteer advisory committee and had done several other things, doing trainings on like diversity sort of trainings, trying to improve how the Mexican staff were helping the volunteers come in and team build in order to support each other throughout their 2 years of service.
Broader than sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah. Yeah. To start talking about identity and diversity, yeah. All of that generally. And so the 6 of us participated in the training the whole week. And then the last day we did action planning. The staff did action planning. And we did planning. We decided to create 2 different committees, a peer support network and a diversity and inclusion network. Peer support to do direct peer support, especially with incoming volunteers in their first 3 months of service. Call and check in on them all the time. And then a diversity and inclusion network to help with supporting incoming volunteers in navigating their differences in the Mexican culture with each other, and also to help educate incoming volunteers more about the diversity of Mexico. And the way especially the way we think of our major identity aspects, how that plays out in Mexico.
Where it's basically different tribes or indigenous people versus...
Well, it's very interesting. There's a pretty significant population that identifies as white. The majority identify as mestizo. There are Afro-descendant people, Afro-Mexicanos, and they were only included in the census in 2015. Mm. There's a lot of racism and colorism issues in Mexico, and then talking about the different religions, different immigrant populations. There's significant populations of Koreans, Japanese,
really?
All sorts of different kinds of people, yeah, all throughout Mexico.
Which you don't hear about very much at all.
No, not at all. Yeah, but it's a huge country, so there's all sorts of different kinds of people there. I mean, Frida Kahlo's father was a Lebanese immigrant.
I didn't know that.
Lebanese or Australian. Not Australian, Austrian. Maybe he was Austrian.
Really?
Huh. Mm-hmm. Or Hungarian. Somewhere around there. Yes, Lebanese isn't.
So you and these other volunteers created this network, mm-hmm. and then did you manage that, or how did that...
Yeah, the volunteers manage it. There's a staff liaison on each one, and we work closely with the staff. It's not just some, like, rogue thing or off on its own. Get some funding from Peace Corps Mexico, especially the peer support network, to go and visit volunteers if they're struggling, or to go into the office for trainings or to go to regional volunteer meetings that would happen a couple times a year. Yeah, and I think they're still going strong and seem to have done a world of wonder to help the incoming cohorts, like, become a tight-knit group.
Does this happen in other countries as well?
It does, in some, but it really depends on the leadership and the staff of each of those. And
so that's still continuing. Did mm-hmm. you get to travel around the country much?
Oh, yeah, I traveled a lot. Mexico has a fantastic intra-city bus system, nothing like Greyhound. Very, very, very nice buses. So I went all over the place. We were restricted from traveling to a lot of places, but Mexico is such a huge country that I went to Chiapas, Oaxaca, the Yucatan Peninsula. I lived pretty close to Puerto Vallarta, so I went there.
But you did this on your own, or as part of the diversity?
Oh, on my own. Traveling, yeah. Yeah, because it was my final year, my third year. When we were getting it up and running, we were writing the bylaws and figuring out what we were going to do and all that kind of stuff. And then because of all of my work in that, the director of programming and training created the volunteer leader for diversity and inclusion position for me and offered it to me. And then that fourth year, I was in the Peace Corps office. I moved to Querétaro. And through that, I traveled a lot, but that was mostly to support the staff on their site visits.
So you were a volunteer for 3 years, and 1 year you were staff there.
Well, I was a volunteer leader, so I was still a volunteer. But,
you were still the fourth year.
But I was working in the office.
And you were being paid, or no? Oh.
No.
So what did you learn from all of that?
Oof, a lot. Well, I learned that the diversity and inclusion sort of industry or topic area is my field, is my calling. And I've sort of come in and out of it my entire life, starting in kindergarten, and have integrated it into all of the different things that I've done, including urban planning. And now, and so I've just sort of just given up, like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. So I found my path in life through all of this. That's for sure. I learned about myself that I am very resilient and very persistent, and from Mexican culture I learned that above all else the important thing is to love your friends and family and to have a good time and not worry about
all the details,
all the little things, all the, especially being on time.
So those are big lessons to learn. What about the whole orientation to the three goals of Peace Corps, if you think about helping the country?
Mm-hmm.
You clearly provided training and set up some things, so you could say you did something there.
Yeah, I think I transferred a lot of knowledge to the women and the children that I worked with. And the men I worked with too, and I helped them realize that they had it within themselves to do this project, because the whole, especially the recycling project, the whole time we were working on it, the women referred to it as my project, it was my project, and then it wasn't until the last month or two where they're like, oh, you really are leaving. Especially after I extended for the third year, like, oh, you're not leaving. You'll be here forever. Yeah, like, oh, no, this really is our project. Oh, okay. So, I mean, it took 2 years for them to get that, but I also appreciated that they didn't want me to leave and they liked me so much that they really embraced me as part of the community.
Good.
Yeah, and I heard from some of the participants that I changed their minds about U.S. Americans, that they had this idea of gringos. Well, they said gringos specifically. And that now they realize that all of us are like that, and they appreciated that. And, of course, I appreciated that. And because my mom had gone to school in Mexico a couple summers to learn Spanish, so I had some knowledge of Mexico. I really tried not to have preconceived notions, at least about Mexicans. I think I did about my fellow volunteers. Everything that I know about Mexico, I learned while I was there. So I can't say anything was dashed or anything like that, but I just found Mexicans to be the most hospitable, warm, loving people that I have ever encountered. And it's just a shame that we can't get along. Really, our countries. I think we can people to people, but.
Well, it's a unique time.
Yeah.
I hope unique time. You've mentioned a couple of times you didn't get along with your fellow volunteers as much.
Yeah.
Do you think it all comes from that instance during training, or were there other issues?
Yeah, I think it does. And, yeah.
And you were you stationed close to some of the other ones?
There were a couple who were 2 hours away. They're an older couple. They're baby boomers. So I got along with them and some others, I guess, while in country, you know.
But you haven't kept up with anything.
Right. So I guess that's what makes me think, like, oh, the bonds weren't that tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then you did this job for the fourth year, which is a mm-hmm. long time to stay.
Yeah.
And how did that then translate into the job you now have in Washington?
Well, I applied for the job in Washington, and I think...
So the job existed before mm-hmm. you came.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There had been two people. It had been filled twice. But so it was still relatively new. Because once I arrived... it hadn't been filled by anyone for more than a year. So I basically made it into what it is. And it's evolving even more now. But I supported employee resource group programs and basically worked on making sure the workplace is not just diverse, but inclusive, and to identify barriers to that and to propose solutions to eliminating the barriers. And the volunteer leader role was the first time I was like formally working in that capacity. And so it set me up for not really an entry level, but sort of a mid, level position, which is what my position is. Because I had 10 or so years of professional experience generally. And then the more specialized in that particular realm qualified me for the job. I mean, I had to apply for it and I'll go through all of that whole federal sector.
And what are the issues you're facing in Peace Corps? Is Peace Corps, do you think, different than, as an organization, different than other organizations from a diversity point of view?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the issues that we're facing are any different than any other organization faces, especially one that has often run like very lean and very much focused on supporting volunteers in the field and not so much on the workplace, because we have a 5-year rule. There's a constant turnover. People come to the Peace Corps and go to other development agencies or federal agencies and come in and out, and like there's this fluid, but there's a kind of a cast of characters that is constantly coming in and out, and is in charge, really, of the Peace, runs the Peace Corps. And then most other people work there for 5 years and then go get a job somewhere else. So that's one of the big problems, is this constant turnover, and we don't have systems in place where the people, the positions that are constantly turning over, the people who fill those can just plug in, just plug and play. There's a lot of coming in and relearning and reinventing the wheel and all this kind of stuff. And I think we're also an organization that needs to catch up to the 21st century and to the changing demographics. That is not 1961 anymore. In 10 years, half of 18 to 24 year olds, I think 18 to 24 will be people of color. And right now there's a 50 year difference between volunteers and our leadership. And that generational divide is very, 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 very obvious in the way that we communicate, in the way that we see issues.
And why is that? And the reason I'm asking that is, you know, I've interviewed lots of people, and they say that, you know, Peace Corps opened up their minds and their to the world and how different people are, and they think so differently about people, and, you know, lots of people say how warm and friendly their host families or their host countries or towns or whatever were. And then yet in the workplace, all these people who say that, it from what you're saying, it doesn't translate to the workplace. And why is that?
I don't know exactly why, but it's very easy to forget that just because we're all U.S. Americans, or that we all work for the Peace Corps, that we're all different. We all have different backgrounds. We all have different experiences. We all have different experiences as volunteers. And that, and people seem to forget the history of this country. And maybe never learned the history. Maybe don't know the facts about civil rights and things like this. And that we had laws where women had no rights. Like all of these kinds of things. And it's, time marches on and progress keeps going. I think it is true that the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice, absolutely, like Dr. King said. And I also think at the Peace Corps, we get into this mindset, oh, well, I served abroad, I lived in this other place, so I know how it is, these other people, and I get diversity and inclusion, but it's different here, and they don't know it. And so I think we can't get out of our own way in some ways. And to be open and curious again and not say, oh, well, that doesn't matter. You just leave all of yourself at the door. And that's the generational difference. I think older generations were raised and socialized to leave that at the door. And I'm 39, so I'm an elder millennial. I was not raised to leave that at the door. Well, maybe I was raised to leave that at the door, and I rebelled against that. Yeah, I definitely rebelled against that. So, and the ones coming behind me, even less so. And so it, from where I sit, what I see is the Peace Corps needs to change, or will not be relevant in 10 years.
And what do you think the problems are with just recruiting people of color?
There's no problem recruiting. It's in this election.
Okay, talk a little bit about that.
People apply. People apply and people are qualified. We have diverse groups of qualified folks for jobs and volunteer service. And then when it comes down to choosing people for the jobs, they're not getting chosen.
And is that because of bias?
Could be. We don't know. We're just starting to look into it.
Because I had always heard it was the application process that was the problem. Or that people, you know, don't have the orientation or the money to be able to afford to take something really low paying for a couple of years.
Yeah, and that I would say that's probably, especially for volunteer service, that's definitely part of it, the socioeconomics of it. I went into debt applying to the Peace Corps because it was before Obamacare and I didn't have insurance. But we haven't, I mean, we're not a self-reflective agency. And I don't want to talk too much about it because it's, I'm not a spokesperson for the agency, but we're just starting to look into it. Mm-hmm. To look from a systemic and institutional way. There have been initiatives and training programs and things like that, but that it doesn't work, especially somewhere that has constant turnover. And so we're trying to identify the barriers and then come up with a plan to recommend solutions for those barriers, taking into account the fact that we will turn over every 3 years.
And maybe turnover isn't all that it was expected to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because the idea is, the volunteer corps will diversify and then the employees will too, and that is not happening. The volunteer groups have diversified and it's not translating.
To staff?
No.
So the volunteers have diversified.
Even I mean, there's still improvements to be made, but yeah, for the last 5 years, it's been at 30% underrepresented groups.
And that's both race, ethnicity, sexual orientation across the board?
Yeah, I think we only track race, ethnicity, and gender. Sex, male and female, really.
Oh, so.
They ask questions about whether or not you're transgender in the application on the health history form, but that's just for the medical purposes. We don't track that in terms of demographics.
And of course, if it's considered not welcoming, then people don't come there, so
right.
Self-perpetuating.
Yeah, and people talk to each other. Volunteers have friends who are not volunteers who are maybe considering it, and if they have a great experience, they'll translate that. If they don't have a great experience, they'll translate that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And right now, I mean, they just started this refer a friend program, and I would not refer a friend to the Peace Corps right now, personally.
Mm. Even though you had a good experience. Do you think you had a good experience?
I think all told, yeah. The days were long, but the months went by fast. And I learned a lot, and it got me here. And the last 3 years have been really hard. Coming back was really, really difficult. I mean,
what was hard about coming back?
Well, I came, before the Peace Corps, I lived in Oregon for 12 years. So that's a much different culture. And then I lived in Mexico for 4 years, much different culture. So then I moved back for this job. So West Coast, Mexican culture clashing with East Coast culture. The job was really difficult, the election, and then an understaffed, under-resourced office for the last 3 years, and personal stuff. But it also made me realize the importance of dealing with all of that stuff. And coming out the other side, I see, once again, how resilient I am and how important it is to take care of myself and for others to take care of themselves and to just, you know, treat each other with love and kindness and try to see that we're all doing the best we can.
So you found your niche, though, whether it's a Peace Corps or not.
Yeah.
You'll be involved in diversity.
Yes.
Training and other issues.
Yeah.
How long have you been at Peace Corps now?
3 years.
3 years. Mm-hmm. So you have two more to go? Are you gonna,
yeah.
What do you think you'll do afterwards?
I'm not really sure. I think probably another federal agency, at least for a little while, just to see what it's like.
So D.C. isn't as bad as you thought it was?
It's growing on me now. Now that I'm, like, less traumatized, I think. It's getting better. It's growing on me, I think. And I think job prospects are pretty good here, probably.
Well, and there are federal agencies all over the country as well.
Yeah.
So. Great.
Yeah.
So are there any questions I didn't ask you or something you want to say that I didn't ask you about? This is really your interview.
Well, I guess I did say that I didn't get along with volunteers a number of times, but I do want to clarify that that was, I mean, there were, of course, people that I got along with. I would just say there were cohorts after me in Mexico that were super tight, and they all got along, and I got to see that because I was there for so long, and so I'm just a little jealous of that. But I definitely had some friends from other, especially from other groups, who I am still in contact with, and I see on a regular basis.
It's yeah. the luck of the draw
right,
you end,
exactly.
end up with.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially since Mexico is in a transition in the program and all that kind of stuff, so we were all sort of...
Mexico was in a transition as a program in what respect?
Well, because it's so new, I think they've been figuring
out... When did it actually start in Mexico?
2006.
Oh, so just a short time.
Yeah.
And how many volunteers are there now? Do you know?
I think at a time they have about 65 to 80.
So it's a pretty small program.
Yeah. Yeah, they were starting to expand more, but the sites where it's safe to send folks are so far away from the office that it's hard for staff to get there in a timely manner, because they have to... Peace Corps changed some of the rules, and they have rules now about how many times staff have to visit volunteers, and so they're, like, constantly traveling to fulfill those requirements.
Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you for the interview.
Yeah, thank you. This is great.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.